in this room.
We'll call the Senate Tax Committee to order. Today is a day that we're going to go through a number of TIF provisions that we have in front of the committee. We're going to start this morning with Senator Claussen, Senate File 846. Welcome to the Tax Committee, Senator Claussen.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, and also committee members. For the record, my name is Greg Claussen. I'm a member of the Minnesota Senate, representing the communities of Apple Valley, Rosemont, Coates, and Northeast Lakeville. Senate File 846 is a tax increment financing bill that authorizes the City of Apple Valley to provide loans, subsidies, grants, interest rate subsidies, or other forms of assistance to develop building and facilities in the community or create or retain jobs. The proposal extends the authority to spend tax increment by the city until December 31st, 2014. And at this time, I'd like to introduce Tom Lowell, Apple Valley City Administrator, and Bruce Nordquist, Apple Valley Community Development Director, who will offer testimony regarding the scope of the tax instrument financing proposal. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator. Mr. Lowell?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, we very much appreciate the opportunity to speak with you here this morning about this bill, 846. If this bill looks vaguely familiar, you had a bill back on February 26th, the general law provision, Senator Rest Bill 669, which is very much in parallel with this. But what we are interested in at this point is to also have a separate bill for the Apple Valley tax increment finance extension. And this relates to what was commonly called the Jobs Bill. This was in previous law. It actually had expired last year when this committee, as well as the House, passed something very similar. It was in the omnibus tax bill, which was then ultimately vetoed. So, again, this should be very similar. What we're attempting to do in Apple Valley is to continue to develop jobs in our community. We appreciate the focus that this body has had in creating jobs in the state, and we are trying to do our part in Apple Valley. We were able to take advantage of the prior law, and we were able to build 100,000 square feet with another 100,000 square feet to come, perhaps creating as many as 250 jobs as part of that. We do have one other project that was not able to be completed in this past year, and that is why we're before you today. We could use your assistance in having reauthorization of this particular tool so that we can advance this existing project that we're trying to bring it over the finish line. This project would be located in our downtown area of Apple Valley. Apple Valley, of course, is a southern suburb of about 50,000 people. We are located on the Red Line, the soon-to-be-opened Cedar Avenue Bus Rapid Transitway. We have quite an investment that has gone into that, both local money, county money, and state money. And what we hope to do here is to bring these jobs adjacent to that particular corridor and be able to maximize the use of that corridor as well as create these jobs in Apple Valley. So we are excited about the project. We think that this is a good one, and we think that this tool will be absolutely essential in bringing this project to fruition. Our extension, our deadlines that are in the bill, were a little bit longer than tax Senate File 669, but I understand that there has been an amendment to Senate File 669 that extends those dates. So I think our dates in our bill are very much consistent with 669. So the general law provision of 669 would work for us, but we also would like to advance Senate File 646, the Apple Valley-specific bill. I have with me here Bruce Nordquist. He's our community development director, and Mr. Nordquist and I would be happy to entertain any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Lowell. Let the record show a quorum is present. Mr. Nordquist.
Just to build on Mr. Lowell's groundwork, what we're talking about is in excess of 500 jobs that would be located about two blocks away from a large transit facility that today only provides express bus services to downtown Minneapolis and St. Paul. The biggest challenge for Apple Valley is a great place to live, great place to shop.
Could you pull the mic in a little bit, please?
Thank you. Apple Valley is a great place to live and a great place to shop, and we'd really like it to be a great place to work beyond that. Every day, Monday through Friday, 24,000 commuters leave Apple Valley to go work somewhere else in the Twin Cities area. And we'd like to give them some new choices, and this is an opportunity to do that.
Thank you. And Mr. Lowell, am I pronouncing your name?
Lowell.
Lowell, you mentioned the general law that Senator Rest has, Senate File 669. We took a look at this yesterday in comparison to the proposal that Apple Valley has. Looks to us like they're very similar, except that Senator Rest has 6 months longer for the date to certify the district. Mm-hmm. So would if we include the general law in the tax bill, will that work for Apple Valley?
Yes, it will.
Okay. Thank you. Any questions, members? Anybody else wish to testify on Senate File 846? Senator Clausen, any closing comments?
Not at this time, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Seeing no further questions, thank you, Senator. Thank you, members. Senate File 846 is laid over for possible inclusion. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Senator Hall. Senate File 817. Welcome to the Tax Committee, Senator Hall.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We have another TIF file. File is 817, and I have I'm proud to have with me today the mayor of Savage, which this TIF will be in, and I'll have Janet Williams present a little bit, and I have two attorneys with me, and I'll let them introduce themselves.
Welcome, Mayor Williams. Welcome to the Tax Committee.
Thank you. The City of Savage is seeking your support and approval for Senate File 817 that's before you that would provide our community with the ability to consider the creation of a tax increment district for the purposes of completing a mining reclamation project for Prior Lake Aggregate site in Savage. Savage is located in the Southwest Metro with a current population of 28,000. The Prior Lake Aggregate site is located in our southernmost portion of our community, and basically it sits at the back door of the Prior Lake High School. That's right, I said the Prior Lake High School in Savage, but that's another story for another day. Back to the issue at hand. Prior Lake Aggregate site has been in operation in Savage since the early 1970s. 280 acres of the operation are within the City of Savage, with an additional 194 acres that are in Credit River Township. A four-lane roadway separates the portion in Savage and that in Credit River. Today, there's no mining on the Credit River side. The Savage portion of the operation is nearing completion, and our request today is that today would give the City of Savage the authority, if we choose, to pursue the creation of tax increment district to cover the infrastructure costs associated with the final development plan of the property. The conceptual development plan for the area in question includes 500 single family lots, 1,000 medium density lots, and up to 750,000 square feet of commercial mixed-use development. The infrastructure costs associated with this project include trunk water and sewer extensions, stormwater management, and roadway improvements to access the site. The total estimated costs for simply bringing the necessary infrastructure to the site would exceed $5 million. An additional cost also would be incurred by the property owner for the final grading and restoration, as well as the internal infrastructure costs. At project completion, we believe the potential exists for an additional $450 million in market value, generating over $10 million per year in new property taxes. And given the size of the project, it is likely that the development will occur in several phases over the next 3 to 10 years, pending economic conditions. Tax increment is one of the few development tools available to enhance the potential tax base of this area and to stimulate the creation of jobs. Your respectful consideration of our request for the passage of Senate File 817 would be appreciated.
Thank you, Mayor Williams. Mr. Casserly?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, that is me. Should I go through the bill? Is that what would you? I really don't need to add anything.
Senator Hall, do Mr. Casserly or Mr. Duffy want to add?
I think they're here more for questions. I think Janet did a great job of explaining it. So any members have questions?
Senator Hall or to the mayor or whoever, we're looking at the proposal, Senate File 817. Senator Ortman did a good job last year on a general law provision dealing with mine reclamation. It hasn't become law yet, but we're planning on including that in our tax bill this year and continuing her effort. We think that general law provision would cover the effort that you guys are attempt. So am I seeing that is the case? If we are successful with that will do what the city of Savage needs?
Mm-hmm. Mr. Chairman,
please state your name for the record again.
James Casserly. I'm legal counsel for the company, and I work with the city. I helped with that draft legislation last year. I worked with Senate Counsel. And we are looking at that legislation right now to see if our project will fit within it. We think it will. The problem becomes how the parcels are configured. They're not neat. They're all different sizes. And mm-hmm. and we are just we're in the process of doing that right now. Our first reflection on this is that it will work. But we would like to get back to you, because if we need a small adjustment, we'd like to be able to talk to you about that. But we do think the general law approach is the way to go.
Yeah, very good. And I would encourage you to continue to see if that fits. And if it doesn't, Senator Hall, you can be in contact with either I or Senator Ortman and see if we can accommodate what you need.
Mr. Chair.
Hi, thank you, Mr. Chair. Can you just tell me what road runs between? I'm trying to picture where this is. And you mentioned
it's on County Road 44, County Road 44 and County Road 27 on the south end of Savage. If you went on, and of course it abuts Prior Lake and Credit River Township there, but the actual mine, Prior Lake Aggregate, is within the city limits of Savage. And part of the mining permit that was issued back in the 60s, I think, is that the applicant has to restore the site, so that's why we're planning ahead for that now.
Okay, thank you.
Anything else, members?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a clarifying thing for my own curiosity, I guess, if it doesn't take too long. Could maybe council just review the paragraph C and D, just refresh my memory, that impact? Thank you.
Mr. Silva, could you go through that for us, please?
Sure. Mr. Chair, Senator Chamberlain, paragraph C has to do with kind of the pooling requirements. Typically, 75% of the increment must be spent within the district, and what this would do is kind of exempt that requirement, but indicate that increment may only be expended within the kind of project area, so not specific to that particular parcel. And paragraph D has a few components. First, the five-year rule in this bill does not apply. The five-year rule typically requires all kind of construction and whatnot for the project to be completed within 5 years. That is not included in this provision. And the revenue for decertification, typically after the fifth year, so much percentage of the increment has to be spent to kind of decertify the district. Since the five-year rule in this case doesn't apply, the use of revenue for decertification is also exempt.
Thank you. Senator Chamberlain. Anything else, members? Anybody else want to testify on Senate File 817? Well, thank you, Senator Hall. I would encourage you to continue to look at the general law provision that was worked on the last couple of years and see if that'll work for you. If it doesn't, we'll be in contact. So.
Thank you, Chair.
Seeing nothing else, we will lay Senate File 817 over for possible inclusion.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Senator Hall. Senator Bach is chairing the Rules Committee, so we're going to Senator Kent. Welcome to the Senate Tax Committee, Senator Kent.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good morning, and good morning, members. I'm Susan Kent, Senator from District 53, which includes Woodbury and South Maplewood and South Oakdale. And the geography here is really relevant because the East Metro is a big part of what we're talking about today from a regional perspective. I'm here to introduce Senate File 475, which would allow Maplewood to create a new redevelopment incremental financing district, the 3M Renovation and Retention Project Area. I believe this is an important step in the long-term partnership between one of Minnesota's most legendary companies and the surrounding community and our state. As many of you know, I come from the private sector and a marketing background, so I can't help but think about brands. And when we think about Minnesota's brand, many positive attributes come to mind. Our wonderful natural environment and opportunities to explore and play, a highly educated population and workforce, world-class healthcare, including the Mayo Clinic, and our remarkable cluster of Fortune 500 companies. Arguably, 3M is one of the preeminent of these, embodying Minnesota's heritage, talent, and tradition of innovation. 3M has over 15,000 employees in Minnesota, with more than 10,000 at their corporate headquarters in Maplewood. 3M is continually recognized as one of the most innovative companies in the world, with over 50,000 products in the marketplace. And if you happen to be following them on Twitter, as I am, you'll see that these days they're down at South by Southwest in Austin, Texas, tweeting about some of their most cutting-edge technologies right now. While 3M has R&D facilities around the world, the core of that activity is here in Minnesota, living the tradition of coming up with new and innovative ways to improve our lives. In fall of 2012, 3M announced their desire to further their commitment to Minnesota by building a state-of-the-art R&D facility at their Maplewood headquarters. This lab, at a cost of approximately $150 million, would replace existing, outdating facilities in Maplewood and help keep the core of 3M R&D here in Minnesota. And as an aside, I'd like to add an observation that is true of 3M, but Minnesota overall. You may have seen Lori Sturdivant's column in Sunday's Star Tribune about future workforce needs. We speak of this often in the Committee on Higher Education and Workforce Development. 3M is openly discussing this issue. As a cohort of baby boomers retires, 3M and Minnesota more broadly will face a shortage of workers, particularly in the STEM-related fields. To meet the needs of our state moving forward, we all need to work together to educate our younger Minnesotans and to attract new workers to our state. This project, along with a number of other initiatives, including several in the East Metro, will be a big step in meeting this complex challenge. 3M and the City of Maplewood have been working together in planning for their interconnected future. They've put together a proposal that would assure this lab building is built in Maplewood and at the same time provide the means for the city to address their need for a fire station. The result of their discussions is seen in Senate File 475, which does several things. It creates a TIF district that would encompass the new lab and a newly constructed fire station, and the duration of the TIF would be 25 years. It would exempt the lab from the statewide business property tax, and it would allow the city to capture increment to pay for the construction of their fire station. Allow me to introduce Chuck All, the Assistant City Manager and Public Works Director with Maplewood. But first, Henry Jersdahl, Vice President of 3M Tax, will provide details about 3M's plan for a new research and development facility.
Thank you, Senator Kent. And would you like to start with Mr. Jersdahl?
Mr. Jersdahl, yes, please.
Mr. Jersdahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. My name is Henry Jersdahl. I'm Vice President of Tax and Real Estate at 3M Company. Joining me today are Doyle Shea, the manager of our real estate department, and Jim Casserly, our outside counsel, has been helping us with the legislation. I want to thank you for the opportunity to testify today. As the Senator mentioned, 3M continues to be recognized as one of the most innovative companies in the world. In fact, Booz & Company recently ranked 3M the third most innovative company in the world behind Google and Apple. Our innovation occurs as a result of continuous and focused investment in research and development. 3M maintains research and development facilities across the globe, with the hub of those research and development activities here in Maplewood. 3M is committed to increase its spending on R&D to 6% of sales in the coming years. To give some perspective to that number, our total sales this year are going to be approximately $30 billion. As part of that commitment, 3M is considering the construction of a new state-of-the-art research facility on campus. The new facility would replace two existing lab buildings which have reached end of life. In conjunction with this potential investment, we have been working cooperatively with the City of Maplewood to seek legislation that would establish a long-term TIF district for the research facility and surrounding assets, or areas, excuse me. This legislation would limit the increase in property taxes attributable to the new lab. The modest size of the annual increase in property taxes makes it incumbent to establish a long-term TIF district in order to create a meaningful incentive for the company. In addition, we are also seeking forgiveness of the statewide business property tax to further enhance its incentive. I would like to quickly go through some facts on the building. Now, we did have a handout with several slides. I don't know if you have that in front of you. I'd like to refer to the first slide. Some of the data points. We're proposing to construct a 412,000-square-foot facility at a cost of approximately $150 million. It would replace buildings 207 and 209, which are laboratories that were built over 50 years ago. Once completed, the new facility would house approximately 700 current 3M scientific, technical, and support staff. It will take approximately 2 years to complete. As background, the current assessed value of the entire 3M campus is about $210 million, and we paid over $8.5 million of property taxes in 2012. Turning to slide two, this is an overview of the 3M campus. Just to give you some perspective, the total campus is over 437 acres and contains 7.1 million square feet of office and lab space. You can see that the proposed research facility would be located at the northwest corner of the campus next to the 3M Lake. Also, we've highlighted buildings 207 and 209. These are the labs that will be replaced, and we anticipate that they will be torn down once the new lab is completed in 2016. Finally, turning to slide three, this shows the proposed footprint for building 280, which is a proposed research facility. The building complex immediately to the east of the research facility is home to the company's healthcare businesses and numerous labs. We're anticipating that the new research facility will be connected to these buildings through a skyway. This will allow greater collaboration among our scientific community, which is a key to 3M's success. Again, I want to thank the committee for your consideration of this important legislation related to the company's proposed research investment.
Thank you, Mr. Jersdahl. Mr. Hall?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Senators. My name is Chuck All. I'm the Assistant City Manager in Maplewood, and certainly we're here today to talk about the support for the City of Maplewood with 3M working to make this project a reality. As Mr. Jersdahl talked about, we're talking about a long-term commitment to the Maplewood campus and 700 of the very top scientists in the area, making, as he said, a hub of innovation, and they're doing it in the east side and the Maplewood campus. A little information for you. 3M is a major component of Maplewood. They pay 12% of the property taxes in our city. So that's obviously huge and important for us, but simply the investment and reinvestment and recommitment to this campus is obviously huge for the east side and Maplewood. These 700 positions, as Mr. Jersdahl talked about, this is going into a shovel-ready project. They are ready to build. They are moving through a process, and should the legislature and you approve of this bill, they are ready to start construction. And so shovel ready is absolutely paramount that we move forward. We are asking for this legislation. It allows for a longer district because of the information, as Mr. Jersdahl talked about, and also for a single district just for the R&D facility. Rather than locking in that tax base, you can see the impact to the Maplewood taxpayers if we locked in the tax base for a 25-year period for 12% of our property taxes. would be significant. And so that would also be harmful to the county and school district as we move forward. As we mentioned, we do have a fire station as part of this. Let me explain Maplewood's thinking on this. Maplewood is a major contributor to fiscal disparities. By having to contribute to fiscal disparities reduces our ability to provide funds to 3M through TIF by 34%. So literally one-third of the amount of the money is available. Our proposal, because we are going to have to close two fire stations simply because of the age of those stations and our ability to recruit firefighters and move from a paid-per-call system to a hybrid full-time system, we need a central fire station with sleeping quarters, and 3M is working with us through this project to build the fire station immediately north on a parcel of land that we were talking about them dedicating to Maplewood for construction of that. And so we would like to your consideration to allow us to be able to provide them with fiscal disparities and also to allow us to use a portion or all of revenues from TIF to help pay for the fire station as part of this project. From the standpoint of dollars, again, I mentioned one-third approximately impact of fiscal disparities. By combining that issue, without getting into the specifics, we hate to do that, but literally we're talking potentially of a $9 million worth of impact through this fiscal disparities approach because of that. If certainly Maplewood has the option to include the fiscal disparities and also pay for our $4 million fire station, in effect, our council believes that that's double jeopardy, where we have to provide something for what truly is a regional and a state benefit, having to provide both the fiscal disparities and then also ask our taxpayers to pay for the fire station, which somewhere in the $3 to $4 million range is what our fire station cost is. So we believe that that's going to be very difficult for us to provide that support and ask for your consideration of the fire station. So with that, again, I'm here to very much be supportive of 3M and their request for your support of this bill, and we ask for your support, and I'm available for any questions, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Hall. And Mr. Hall, and I don't know if Mr. Casserly wants to add just for questions. The use of the increment for general government use is not something that we've ever done before, and I think that while I hope that we're able to include parts of the Maplewood TIF proposal in the tax bill this year, I think that that is going to be problematic. I think we're going to have to go back and revisit that issue because we just have not used general or TIF increment for general government use. So we're going to have some further conversation about that. And then also the capturing the state general tax, that is also an issue that we're going to have to work through if there's a better or different way for this to move forward. Those two areas are problematic from my perspective. And I don't know, committee members, Senator Artman.
Well, Mr. Chair, I agree. I mean, I want the community to be able to plan their community the way they want and to serve 3M the way that they want. But this would be a departure from anything we've done before. And in some ways, it kind of looks like the Mayo proposal in some ways. And it might work well in your community, but what if you applied that test in every community? And we would have some very serious problems continuing with the scope of state government. And so it's problematic for me too, Mr. Chair, and let's see if there's some other way maybe to approach some of the concerns that you have.
Thank you, Senator Artman. Senator Dietzick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I echo what you and Senator Artman say. I know Hennepin County is working on a emergency operations center, and I'm sure they'd like the opportunity to use TIF, and I'm sure there's many other smaller communities throughout the state that would like to use TIF on, you know, fire departments, school buildings, all sorts of things. So I like your creativity. We want to keep 3M here, and I think there's a lot of good in the proposal. I'm just concerned that this opens the door for future precedents on other projects like that. So,
Senator Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee. I do think those are worthy comments to consider when we do something new and innovative, and we want to be innovative in Minnesota government. We must be innovative, but also to look at it with a critical eye as far as setting future precedent. And I do think we can set a high precedent for the uniqueness of a project, the number of jobs created, how it impacts the state economy. And so I do think there are those rare instances. This might be one. I don't know enough about this project at this point, where there are specific assets to the state of Minnesota as a whole. And so I do trust the legislature can, in its infinite wisdom, write legislation that allows for innovative protection and growth of our statewide assets, and yet do it in a in a way that sets a high bar.
Senator Kim.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I want to thank all the members for recognizing sort of the unique opportunities and challenges here. We are definitely open to trying to come up with some solutions. This is because of the land being a part of 3M that is going to be used for the fire station. You know, it introduces some new wrinkles, and so we appreciate your understanding, the approach, and you know, we do want to try to see what we can do to make this work.
And Senator Kent, I'd like to include parts of this in the Senate tax bill, so I'd encourage you and Mr. Hall and Mr. Casserly to get together with Senate counsel and anybody else you think can be helpful and see if we can work this out, because I'd like to do something here. Mr. Casserly, did you want to add something?
Mr. Chair, thank you for the consideration. And I'm sure the committee realizes the conundrum that faces communities. And I don't want to dwell on the whole fiscal disparities issues, but when you involve a community that has a major contribution to fiscal disparities and you are creating tax increment districts, your commercial industrial property tax dollar in a tax increment district, remember, one-third of it goes to the state. Another one-third goes to fiscal disparities. 5 to 10% is caught in the base of the district, and what you have left over is probably in the range of 28 to 33, 34%. I mean, that is what is available. So this is just the math of trying to sort it out, and we appreciate the committee's consideration. But that's why we were looking at the state levy, because the local communities are confronted with the same situation. And matter of fact, they even have a more difficult problem due to the interaction of fiscal disparities. The state can actually, probably doesn't want to do this, but the state can actually make it revenue neutral and allow the state levy to be captured as tax increment. And we can talk further with staff about how that can be accomplished. But just so that I know you understand the dilemma that we have in trying to put some of these things together, but it becomes real apparent when you see all the interaction of the different laws.
Well, the question I would have, if it wasn't for the fire station, just the building for 3M, the R&D building, would work within the TIF district if it wasn't for the complicating factor of the fire station. Am I correct in that assumption?
That's more of a political question than a financial one. And the answer, the direct answer, Mr. Chairman, is yes. If the community would not take fiscal disparities out of the district, 3M would have a sufficient amount of funds to finance its infrastructure. That's what this tax increment is going for. It's not going for the building. It's going for the infrastructure to make services available. And the community is really caught in a bit of a dilemma, and so they are looking at a way to use a fire station to assist with what is the fiscal disparities impact. That's the trade-off from the community side, and that's a political decision they have to make.
Mr. Chair.
Mr. Hall.
To answer your question specifically,
our city council is as Mr. Casserly just explained, they're struggling with that. And I use the term double jeopardy, literally having to pay twice. And that fiscal disparities impact is literally to the effect of potentially $8 or $9 million of impact to our taxpayers, as well as we see a need that we have to build a fire station. The fire station is on land directly north and on 3M land. It serves this 3M campus. Granted, our responsibility to local government is to provide a fire station that serves more than just the campus and serves this entire region of our city, but it has that nexus. And so it was one of the areas that we understand the concern and the difficulty, but it's because of that double jeopardy issue that we're looking at this alternative solution and understand that it creates those problems, but it also puts that difficult situation of having to hit twice to our city council and go to the taxpayers twice for something that's related to the same site.
Well, let's continue to work on it. Senator Artman.
Just one other comment. I see some similarities and obviously some differences with what's happened in the city of Winona. Winona has a very high level of local government aid, and one of the reasons why is because they are providing services for commercial industries in the area. They have a really high need for fire safety and some things like that, and that's one of the reasons why when we measure what cities get what types of LGA, Winona ends up being one of those big ones. And so I kind of see that. I know you're not an LGA city, which makes it even harder. And so these are not easy issues, and I recognize that. But I also am not all that comfortable changing the way we do business based on one city's needs. There may be others just like you, and then maybe there is a chance to maybe look at this on a broader scale or provide permissions to any city in the state of Minnesota for particular needs if they can be well defined. I think there's a lot of work to be done to do that, and you may have a very steep learning curve, but I do see some similarities with what you're saying and the extra burden that hits a city when they have a business like 3M and trying to meet the needs of serving that business. I get it.
Any closing comments, Senator Kent?
No, I just want to thank you, Mr. Chair, and members for hearing this and for appreciating some of the complexities of this discussion, and we appreciate your willingness to work with us as we move forward.
Thank you. Senator Eaton?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to add that I have also an concern about removing this much of the property tax base for 25 years for the school district. I'm wondering if there's been any discussions with the school district or the county as to the effect on them.
Mr. Chair?
Mr. Hall.
Senator, yes, we're certainly reaching out, and that's one of the provisions of the bill. Rather than capturing the entire $10 million property tax base, this creates allows us to create a single district just around the research and development facility, rather than locking in that $210 million for a 25-year period. That's one of the provisions of the bill.
Okay.
And one of our concerns as well is that we wouldn't want the 3M 12% of our property tax base locked. Certainly, I guess if property taxes the base is going to go down, we'd like it locked, but we don't see that happening over the next 25 years. So thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you, Senator Kent. We will lay Senate File 475 over for possible inclusion. I'll look forward to meeting with you folks. Thanks.
Thank you.
Senator Wicklund? She's here. I saw her.
There it is.
Welcome to the Tax Committee, Senator Wicklund.
Thank you, Senator Skoy. And good morning, and good morning to the committee as well. I'm here today to present Senate File 207. This is a bill relating to development in Bloomington. It's part of Bloomington that includes the Mall of America, but also includes an area known as the South Loop area of Bloomington and extends to the border of Bloomington between Bloomington and Burnsville, where the Minnesota Valley National Wildlife Refuge is located. There are three big aspects to or pieces to this bill, which I will describe at a high level before introducing testifiers who will speak to each piece. This bill has potential to create a significant number of jobs. We're very excited to be here to talk about this bill. You've seen some of the aspects before, but I want to go through the three largest pieces. First, I'd like to talk about one of the significant pieces that has to do with a public amenity. This is the Old Cedar Avenue Bridge. The bill provides $7 million in additional funding or bonding for this bridge. It's a bridge that was given to the city of Bloomington when the Highway 77 bridge was built across, new Highway 77 bridge was built. It's been closed for the past 10 years and needs additional funding to be restored. This is a valuable public amenity. It has both local and regional impact. It would connect, restoration of this bridge would connect Hennepin and Dakota counties. And it also is located right in the Minnesota National Wildlife or Minnesota Valley National Wildlife Refuge. This is a bridge that will be used by hikers, bikers. It's a commuting link, it's a recreational link, and it's a very important part of this development. The second aspect has to do with the Mall of America Phase 2. This bill would allow for the city to capture fiscal disparities taxes and from the two Mall of America TIF districts for use in getting enhancements going for the Mall of America Phase 2. And I will let the mall talk more about that. The third large portion of this has to do with an area called Bloomington Central Station. McGuff is the developer, and they this bill contains provisions to TIF provisions to allow the development to get going in that area as well. So what I'd like to do is I have testifiers here today from all the different aspects of the bill. First, I'd like to introduce Mayor of Bloomington, Gene Winstead, who will talk about the overall development in the South Loop area. And then I will have one of my constituents here to talk about the Old Cedar Avenue Bridge. So first, Mayor Winstead.
Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Wicklund.
Mr. Chairman, Senators. You've received some handouts. The handout that I think I'd like to refer to is this one that I think was just distributed.
And Mayor Winstead, if you would say your name for the table.
Mayor Gene Winstead, City of Bloomington. Bloomington's vision is really to develop this South Loop in a significant way, and really it can be in terms of economic growth and jobs. Senate File 207 describes a partnership between the state and the city to make these developments feasible, and they were touched on by Senator Wicklund, the different areas. Page 2 of this handout just really defines and shows what the South Loop area is and how it's centrally located in the metro area. And you also need to know that it is one of the central transit hubs in the state, and there's a great amount of activity going on there. And it's part of our goal is to create density around these transportation amenities. Pages 3 and 4 of the handout describe the Old Cedar Avenue Bridge, and there's more detail there, but this was a bridge built in 1920. It was owned by the state until 1979, and right now the bridge is in unsafe condition, and it is closed and sealed off. It's a 900-foot link bridge between the regional trails in the South Loop and really the state's future trail along the Minnesota River Valley. And the options are to reconstruct the existing steel truss bridge or to replace it. And this bill appropriates an additional $7 million to accomplish that project. Pages 5, 6, and 7 of the handout go and they touch base about the Mall of America and what this bill means in that arena. And it's regarding the subsequent phases to plan. You know, the subsequent phases of the mall is to double its size with additional office, hotel,
and retail space. And a great example of that is on this Friday, the Radisson Blue Hotel will be opening. It's a 500-room hotel, and it'll be a great amenity to the area, to the South Loop District. The Mall of America Phase 1 TIF district will expire in about 3 years, and the value then goes back into the tax rolls. And this bill's concept, is, as stated, is to use the fiscal disparities contribution to fund public improvements associated with the subsequent phases. And the state has benefited greatly from the Mall of America, obviously, in income taxes, property taxes, sales taxes, and the great amount of tourism that it has generated to the area. Page 8 of the handout just gives you a little bit of overview on the Bloomington Central Station portion of it. And our city has approved McGuff's transit-oriented development plan for a hotel, residential, and office in this area. And the value of TIF has been cut in half over the last years. And this provides for 5 years of, this provides the TIF district an 8-year extension, as well as extends the 5-year rule. So this bill, Senate File 207, really is to help accelerate development in the South Loop area around the existing transportation assets, such as the light rail, as well as increase state revenues from the Mall of America. And we can add about 8,000 jobs to this area over the next about 8 years. So we're looking forward to that. So.
Thank you, Mayor Winstead.
Mr. Chairman, Senators, my name is Chuck Chose, and I live in Bloomington. Thank you very much for letting me talk to you today. I walked the old Cedar Avenue Bridge several times a week for 3 years before it closed. I'm also in an informal group of users and government groups working to get the bridge back. I'm delighted to say I know of no group opposed to fixing the bridge. In fact, Tim Pawlenty and Mark Dayton both attended and gave their gubernatorial support at separate rallies for fixing the old bridge. I saw three broad groups of users of the bridge. The largest group was local citizens, individuals, kids, couples, families, out for a walk or a bike ride in a very nice, easy-to-get-to place. This included people in wheelchairs and walkers because the bridge is handicap-friendly. People can and did wheel or shuffle directly from the parking lot to the bridge. No stairs, no barriers. And almost everyone stopped on the bridge to look out over Long Meadow Lake. They loved it. The local users aren't organized advocates for the bridge, even though they sure used it. I hope the city of Bloomington joins in to help fix it for them. The other two groups are from a wider area. Before the bridge closed, it was a destination for one, serious bikers and hikers, and two, nature lovers. The serious trail users, the bridge was a draw, the node that connected trails south of the Minnesota River with trails to the north. Demand for biking and hiking trails has grown and become more organized since the 2002 bridge closure. Minnesota DNR's Parks and Trails, local governments, and citizen trail groups are working diligently for trail expansions. It's increasingly illogical for the closed bridge to break the connection of trails north and south of the river. The bridge was a draw for nature lovers, too, statewide and beyond. This group includes educators, photographers, and birders. The bridge crosses Long Meadow Lake, which I consider the refuge's most important water bird marsh. It's featured in Minnesota Audubon's tourist guide, the Minnesota River Valley Birding Trail. It's also featured in an online guide to Minnesota's handicapped accessible birding areas. The bridge was cited frequently in the Minnesota Ornithologists Union's email bird alert. It may have been the most cited spot in the state. I wasn't keeping track at the time. But it seemed bridge sightings were reported several times a week, more than from any other spot. Every interesting bird anywhere in central Minnesota seems to turn up on Long Meadow Lake. People came from far and wide for a look. In my opinion, the old Cedar Avenue Bridge is the best viewing spot on the best water bird marsh in the metro counties and beyond. One example. Last year, a white-faced ibis swooped onto Long Meadow Lake. Sharp-eyed birders spotted it. The Minnesota Ornithologist Union zapped its bird alert. Word spread like wildfire, and people swept in. They couldn't view the ibis from the bridge, so they looked from a nearby viewing platform on the refuge. The white-faced ibis is a gee-whiz bird. It's big as a mallard with shining, dark, iridescent copper-green feathers and a striking white band where its long, curved bill meets its face. 3 times my wife and I went to see that bird, and each time was like a presidential press conference, a forest of tripods with fancy scopes and pricey long-lens cameras. People were looking and clicking pictures like crazy. I think that ibis is the most photographed bird in Minnesota. So now this bridge, this jewel in a national wildlife refuge, is closed. It serves no public good. It's useless. The refuge might take the bridge, but it can't take it crumbling. If the bridge collapses or is razed, it will cost a lot of money for cleanup and will leave nothing of value when the cleanup is done. I wholeheartedly support fixing the bridge, and I wish you success in getting the bridge to be the wonderful thing it was. Thank you very much for considering my comments.
Thank you, Mr. Chose. Senator Wicklund, I wonder if we should work our way through some more of the testifiers before we go to questions. And
sure.
Mayor Winstead, would you make sure you hang around, because I think there will be questions for you. But let's do Mr. Rudlang, Mr. Griffith, Mr. Fabian.
Yeah, we can have, I think that, Mr. Rudlang, did you have more testimony? I think the mayor covered Mr. Rudlang's testimony. Mr. Hagan would like to speak about the Mall of America Phase 2.
Okay.
And then Mr. Fable would like to talk about McGuff.
Very good. Welcome, Mr. Hagan.
Thank you, Chairman, Senators. My name is Kurt Hagan. I'm Vice President of Development for 555 at the Mall of America. In 1985, 555 proposed an unprecedented project for Minnesota that became one of the most visited attractions in North America, what we now call Mall of America. In exchange for an investment in public infrastructure, 555 promised a $625 million development that would create 10,000 jobs, bring in millions of tourists from all over the world, and generate tens of millions of new tax revenues to the state, city, and the region. Many thought the idea was crazy, certainly risky, but Bloomington Mayor Jim Lindau, city leaders, Governor Rudy Perpich, and the 1986 legislature believed and provided a public funding source to make Mall of America a reality. Today, with over 20 years of history behind it, we can now say that Mall of America has met or exceeded every single projection it made. Today, Mall of America attracts 42 million annual visitors and has an annual economic impact to our state of over $3 billion. Today, Mall of America is one of the state's largest taxpayers, generating more than $1.2 billion since its inception. It now generates over $80 million in taxes each year on-site alone, 2 to 3 times that amount if you count off-site taxes generated by tourists staying in hotels, renting cars, and visiting other state attractions while in Minnesota. Mall of America created 7,000 construction jobs during the peak of the 1990s recession and over 13,000 permanent jobs for the state. Currently, there are nearly $200 million in new projects under construction at Mall of America, including the new Radisson Blue, as the mayor mentioned, that will open this Friday. We always are building something new, which is why people keep coming back to Mall of America. Today, half of the mall sales come from tourists, meaning half of the $40 million in annual sales tax generated on-site come from tourists traveling to Minnesota. These same tourists visiting Mall of America spend over $2 billion annually outside of Mall of America in the state. Mall of America currently has over 70 different tour packages with over 30 different countries, and it's consistently named one of the best family attractions in the country. Mall of America has created a brand with more global awareness than GE. With a 20-year track history, Mall of America has proven just how well a public-private partnership can work. Mall of America has paid back public infrastructure many times over in the form of new taxes, new jobs, and tourism generated to our state. Mall of America captures out-of-state tourist dollars and deposits these monies into state, regional, and local infrastructure, bridges, roads, and schools. Our city and state decision makers probably never imagined just how big of an economic impact Mall of America would have on this state when they took a chance on a very big idea and approved funding back in 1986 to provide for the initial public infrastructure required. Now this committee has essentially the same opportunity in front of you, except this time with over 20 years of track history to look back on. We have provided some handouts for each of you that give you more specifics on the taxes, the tourism, and the jobs created by Mall of America. Mall of America has been a proven public-private success story. We now have an opportunity to build on that success and grow Mall of America and create thousands of additional jobs, bring in millions more of tourists to Minnesota, generate tens of millions more in additional taxes each year to the benefit of the entire region and state. We've done this once before with great results, and with your support, we can do this again. Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much. Mr. Fable?
Chairman, Senators, the mayor of Bloomington described, first of all, my name is Mark Fable with McGough Development, representing Bloomington Central Station. The mayor of Bloomington described the South Loop area and the economic challenges that Bloomington Central Station has experienced through the recession and what changes that this bill will address in order to provide us with the opportunity to move forward with the redevelopment. I thought I would focus really on the vision of Bloomington Central Station, touching on some images in this black handout that was handed out earlier today. Bloomington Central Station is a high-density, mixed-use redevelopment centered around a transit station through the Hiawatha LRT corridor. It will introduce up to 2 million square feet of additional future corporate office, a 300-room hotel with 15,000 square feet of conferencing meeting space, an additional 1,000 units of for-sale and or multifamily rental housing homes, a 2-acre central park, and retail that will surround that central park, adding to that vibrancy of that 18-hour type environment, people coming and going throughout the day. If you look at the second page, it describes the location in South Loop where this site is. So the red line is the Hiawatha corridor that travels from the Mall of America toward the airport. The right-hand side of this image is Bloomington Central Station. It's a 50-acre site. And on the left-hand side of this image is the Mall of America and its expansion. Turning the page to the third page is the master plan itself. Again, the eastern side of the site is the housing portion of the site. There's a 2-acre park in the middle of the 50-acre site, with the train line really bisecting the site right down the middle, with a pedestrian corridor on both sides of the train line. On the north side of the park is the hotel that we intend to break ground on this summer, and on the western side of the site is the opportunities for future corporate office. Turn the page to the aerial photo. If you drive out to the site today and you see that what exists now, it's a large sea of surface parking. Essentially, the site has already been developed. Health Partners, corporate headquarters there, and the surface parking that provides for the employees that go to work there each day are what exists now. It's the tax increment financing that allows us to build more densely around this transit station. So, again, it's but for this TIF, the opportunity to develop densely around all the existing public infrastructure wouldn't be possible. Really, again, closing, the rebalancing of our tax increment financing district allows us to continue to drive significant number of construction jobs both on and off-site. It allows us to drive private investment of up to $1 billion over a 20-year time period as the redevelopment continues. And really, the smart decision of developing densely around existing public infrastructure with the airport, the transit line, the highway system, again, where we have existing capacity for development, let's introduce more density. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Senator Wicklund, did Mr. Rudlang and Mr. Griffith, did they want to testify, or are they just here to help?
I don't think they have questions? Additional information right now, but they're available for questions later. I don't know if you have listed members of the building trades. Or you?
I don't, but Ms. Naumann? Oh, building trades?
Yeah, why don't we have them testify, and then you can move to the others that you have.
Welcome to the Tax Committee. State your name for the record.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, committee members, I'm Pete Paris with the Sheet Metal Workers Union. I'm here today to show support for Senate File 207. The Sheet Metal Workers Union, like other building trades, continue to see high unemployment. Currently, we are at about 16% unemployed, but I've seen as high as 34% in the last few years. This is a situation that's existed for the past decade or so. This unemployment represents lost wages, benefits for our members, and lost tax revenue for the state of Minnesota. Our benefit office sends out about 100 letters each month two members whose insurance has run out and now must purchase it out of their own pockets. During the worst times, we saw almost 400 of these letters going out each month. When Phase 1 of Mall of America was being built, I witnessed firsthand the benefits of this project. The years leading up to this project were similar to the current situation. Work was scarce and there was many unemployed. I can personally attest to the hardships of short work weeks and unemployment. Phase 1 of Mall of America was a blessing to me and my family. At a time when we were facing financial hardship, the full work weeks and occasional overtime couldn't have come at a better time. The construction of Mall of America provided me with work for over 2 years. Projects like the Mall of America and the Bloomington Central Station will continue to keep the sheet metal workers working in the coming years as they build, remodel, and update, keeping our members working. We are asking for your support for Senate File 207. With this additional work, we can provide our members with active employment so they can build their pensions, pay for their health insurance, continue to support the economy, and contribute much-needed tax revenue for the state of Minnesota. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Committee members, my name is Dan McCottle. I'm the business manager of the Minneapolis Building and Construction Trades Council. On behalf of our 14,000 members, I'd like to voice our strong support for this bill. As you may know, we have a long-standing partnership with the Mall of America. The mall has been, in our opinion, one of the most successful construction projects in our state's history. It has employed thousands of our members, not only during the Phase 1 construction, but also every day since it opened. We have members out there doing remodels and updates to the project. We also have a similar relationship with the developer of the Bloomington Central Station project. McGuff Construction consistently ranks number one in terms of hours worked by our members for a general contractor. Bloomington Central Station is an exciting new project that we're proud to support, and our members are looking forward to going to work building that project. Not to be overlooked is a third component of this bill, and that is the Old Cedar Avenue Bridge. As a former resident of Southwest Richfield, the bridge was on my regular bike route until the day I found myself stranded on the wrong side of the river when it closed unexpectedly. Its rehab will reestablish the river crossing and close that missing link for bicyclists, hikers, and birders, as we heard. I'd also like to bring to your attention something you may not be aware of, and that is my affiliated unions have not only come here and asked for your help, but we've also put our money where our mouth is. We've invested approximately $70 million of our members' pension funds into both the Mall of America and to the Bloomington Central Station project. We believe the investment in these projects is needed to maintain the vibrancy and competitiveness of the mall in a global marketplace, in Bloomington Central Station to spur further development in the South Loop District, and in the bridge to provide quality life for the residents of the local area. We respectfully request your support.
Thank you very much. Questions for these two? There's one more person that I'd like to bring up, Ms. Nauman, and I'm going to anticipate her testimony just a little bit, Senator, in dealing with the fiscal disparities. That is a controversial component of this bill, and as we move forward, we'll be taking a look at some of that provision, I would expect. But Ms. Nauman?
Mr. Chair and members, excuse me, my name is Patricia Nauman. I'm the Executive Director of Metro Cities. We are an organization representing 86 member cities in the 7-county metropolitan area. I'm not here to oppose this bill as a whole today, but simply to express concerns with the specific provision that does allow for the capturing of fiscal disparities taxes from the two Mall of America TIF districts. While Metro Cities does understand the unique significance of this project, our policies have long opposed diverting from the fiscal disparities pool for specific programs or projects. So we would appreciate your attention to our concerns. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Nauman.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Pat Masha, and I am here testifying on behalf of NAOP, which is the Commercial Real Estate Association that represents developers, owners, managers of commercial properties in the state of Minnesota and the thousands of tenants that occupy our space in Minnesota. I'm a member of NAOP's Fiscal Disparities Subcommittee, its Public Policy Committee, its board, and its immediate past president. And our remarks follow Patricia's, and we are testifying specifically with respect to Section 2 of the legislation and the impact on fiscal disparities. The Metro Area Fiscal Disparities Program was established in 1971 as a way for communities in the metro area to share tax base. It's a way of leveling the playing field and sharing the economic benefits of development among the metro area cities so that all could share in the wealth of that, and there would be reduced competition between cities for commercial real estate development. This proposed legislation, however, subverts that purpose. So we have 3 points to make today in our testimony. First, using the fiscal disparities program as a financing mechanism was not originally contemplated by the original legislation. And we're concerned about the precedent that this will set. It really turns a tax-based sharing tool into an economic development tool and subverts the original intent of fiscal disparities. Secondly, the legislation will result in a smaller pool for all metro area communities to share. So either those communities are going to take less, or that void has to be filled by other commercial industrial property owners by paying more in real estate taxes. Third, existing subsidy programs have appropriate controls in place. There has to be economic analysis. There's the satisfaction of a but-for test. There are time limits on the term. And in addition to that, an execution of a development agreement that typically governs the use of that tool. This legislation has no such controls. Therefore, our position is clear. We favor maintaining the fiscal disparities program as a funding mechanism, and resist using it for subsidizing local, private, or public improvements. Second, we oppose any use of the fiscal disparities program as a funding mechanism. And third, we oppose any diversions of resources from the fiscal disparities program, which would have the effect of requiring business property taxpayers to subsidize losses in the fund among the various communities. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for your testimony. Questions, members? Thank you both very much. Mayor Winstead, and I don't know who else would be appropriate to come back.
Probably Mr. Redling would be helpful if you have questions.
You've heard the testimony about the concern with regard to fiscal disparities, and you guys were here to listen to Maplewood and 3M and their comments with regard to fiscal disparities. And I understand where this proposal came from. I was actually involved in it, so I get that. But if this was a traditional TIF district and we could make this work, would the city of Bloomington be okay with a more traditional TIF district if we could make it work for the mall and the South Loop and all of this project? Because I'd like to see this go forward. I want to make sure we're successful this year, but I also want to try to not cause myself future problems down the road with regards to fiscal disparities.
Mr. Chairman, yes. To those points, first of all, when it comes to the fiscal disparities pool, here again it was a regional tax base sharing mechanism and things like this. And one of the great differences here is I think that the project that this is being talked about in conjunction with the fiscal disparities is one of regional and state significance. So there is, a way to lever that into it. So I think it's more than appropriate. Two, when you look at the traditional TIF district there, the city of Bloomington was the one who issued the TIF district, and which will be closing in about 3 years, took the risk on this one up front early on, and the city of Bloomington's taxpayers bore that brunt and really put forth, as was testified to, that this is a statewide and regional entity. And with the comments of others regarding this, this would represent about 1.3 or 1.4% of the contribution that goes into the fiscal disparities pool region-wide. So I don't see it really moving the needle that much, but I think that it's the fact that it's of such great regional significance is probably a differentiator, as well as and compared to Maplewood, we're not talking about combining it with TIF also. It was fiscal disparities to go forward as the mechanism. Mr. Rudling?
Mr. Rudling?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. To answer your question directly, if this were put back to what we were looking at last year, which is a traditional TIF extension, it does not meet the revenue goals that we need for the project. So the revenue goals on TIF do not meet where we need to be to make the project to go. and to respond to some of the questions that were raised earlier today about the fiscal disparities pool, in that it is a pure program that's never been used for economic development. I'd like to point out that all pre-1971 value was exempted from the pool, so that helped out the cities that were developed at that time. In addition to that, all pre-1979 HRA TIF districts, which also helped out a lot of the central cities, were exempted from the pool, and those are obviously economic development purposes. And in addition to that, Metro Council gets $5 million a year for economic development purposes for cleanup. So the fiscal disparities pool is somewhat used for economic development purposes already for regional purposes. And because Bloomington is the largest contributor to the pool by far as net value, and even after you subtracted out the amount that would be diverted, we would still be the largest contributor to the pool. It's time for Bloomington to share a little bit in the money that we've contributed to the pool over that period of time. Thank you.
Thank you. Questions, members? Anybody else want to testify on Senate File 207? Seeing none. Closing comments, Senator Whitman?
I'd just like to say that I believe this bill provides a great economic impact to the Bloomington area. It would be a jobs impact to the region. I believe that the funding mechanism, from my perspective, just for my constituents, I believe that it should be shared across the region, the fiscal disparities region, rather than a TIF proposal where it impacts my residents more broadly. So I would like to see that continue in the proposal. I think that that all aspects of the project are positive for Bloomington and the South Loop area, and I'd like to see the project move forward.
Thank you, and we'll continue to work and look at this to see if there's some mechanism that we can use to alleviate some of the concerns. There's one thing I forgot to mention, Senator. We are going to not be able to include the bonding provisions for the bridge in this bill. We understand you have another bill introduced that will be moving to the Capital Investment Committee, hopefully.
Correct.
And that will be take care of that. If we include the bonding provision, we have to have a 3/5 majority for the vote for that. So we'll have to take that out, and we will watch the progress of the your other bill as it moves toward capital investment.
Yes, I'm sorry, Mr. Chair. I forgot to mention that earlier. It was introduced, and I don't have the number with me, but it has been introduced several weeks ago. So okay. The
very good
portion.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you. Chair will lay over Senate File 207 for possible inclusion. Thank you very much, members.
Thank you.
Members, Senator Bach is chairing the Rules Committee. Senator Reinhart has agreed to present the City of Ely TIF Authority for Senator Bach. I see he's not a co-author, but maybe we can get him added on the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. As a neighbor to the south of our friends up in Ely, I'm happy to present this bill on behalf of Senator Bach. And
Just a second. Could we have quiet, please? Thank you, Senator Reiner.
Thank you, Chair Skoit. Again, Chair and committee members, I'll just ask the testifiers to introduce themselves and talk about the extension provision, as well as the provision that allows them to move some funds around amongst a couple existing TIF districts.
Thank you, Senator Reinhart.
Good morning. I'm Heidi Omerza, council member from City of Ely. I would like to introduce before you Harold Langowski, our operations director and clerk treasurer, and also John Fito, the City of Ely's economic developer. And I do believe Harold is the one that can give us a little background on this TIF district.
Thank you very much. Mr. Langowski?
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. The City of Ely is requesting
Please state your name so the tape can pick it up.
Yes. Harold Langowski, clerk treasurer. The City of Ely is requesting our two existing TIF districts be adjusted to correct the current and anticipated deficit of TIF revenues in TIF District Number 1. TIF District Number 1 was for the Grand Ely Lodge infrastructure and is scheduled to end in 2017. The TIF District was established to provide the infrastructure to support the construction of the facility. The project has been a success, and the facility is vital to the community for jobs and tourism. The value of the TIF revenue is significantly less than the annual debt payment, resulting in the Ely taxpayers having to fund the deficit on an annual basis. These deficits totaled $50,000 in 2011 and $30,000 in 2012. We have attached spreadsheets showing the continued deficits in TIF District Number 1 if no adjustments are made. Without the requested change, this district will have a deficit in excess of $737,000 at the decertification date for the TIF District in 2017. TIF District Number 3 was established to install infrastructure to support the Ely Business Park and is scheduled to end in 2026. Located in the Business Park is the State Department of Revenue Building and the St. Louis County Government Services Building. Recently, St. Louis County bought the property they were formerly leasing, resulting in an anticipated loss of TIF revenue of $10,240 in 2014 and continuing through the end of that TIF district. We are hoping future development in the district will make up for this loss. Currently, all lots have been sold or are under contract within TIF District Number 3. The district has historically performed above its annual debt service, and the spreadsheet also shows that this fund balance would be a positive $478,000 at the decertification date of that district in 2026. We are requesting the revenues from TIF Number 1 and TIF Number 3 be pooled to pay the combined debt. We are also requesting that TIF Number 1 be extended from 2017 until 2021 to pay the remaining debt. We also have a spreadsheet attached showing these anticipated performances in these two TIF districts by extending one from 2017 to 2021. Without this change, we cannot pool the revenues for anything other than administration. Any excess funds will be used to complete future infrastructure maintenance and repair in these districts as allowed by current state statute. We also attach a resolution requesting this change. We look forward to working with the Senate to get this long-standing issue resolved. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Fito, do you want to add something?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, John Fito, Economic Development Coordinator for the City of Ely's Economic Development Authority. This particular project request to pool these districts will help not only the city's ongoing fund deficit within the districts, but as we look forward to continued building of new business activity within those business parks, a chance to fill out, if you will, that those few vacant spaces. The other opportunity presents itself for the city to capture some new activity that the mining companies that are contemplating locating in the Ely area are promoting. But the tax base itself is somewhat stagnant based on the valuation issues that have obviously occurred elsewhere. And Ely is not unique in that direct result. So the request is the pooling of these two districts that will resolve the issue, not just for the moment, but for long term.
Thank you very much. And so just so I'm clear on what we're doing, we're extending number one to pool in with number three for 4 years from 2017 to 2021, and after that then there will be enough activity that the district will decertify on time in 2026. Am I gathering that right?
Correct. And also TIF District Number 3 is certified until 2026, so the revenues generated by both of these TIF districts will be pooled, and they'll also be used to pay past debt in the general fund. We've had to levy the taxpayers to make these debt payments due to this lack of revenue in TIF District 1. So by pooling them, extending them, we'll be made whole at the end of the decertification in 2026.
And the pooling will end, though, in 2021. Did I gather that correctly?
2021 would be the end of TIF District Number 1. The reason we need them pooled is the additional revenues generated in TIF District Number 3 will be needed to pay past debt in TIF District Number 1. So that's why we had unlimited pooling requested between the two TIF districts.
Okay. Any questions, members? Anybody else wish to testify on Senate File 942? Thank you, Senator Reinhart. Appreciate you doing this for Senator Bach.
My pleasure, Mr. Chair. Spent a lot of time in Ely.
Yeah.
Chair will lay Senate File 942 over for possible inclusion. Thank you. Members, tomorrow's division meeting has been canceled. The division is scheduled to meet again on Thursday. So, thank you for that. I think we're done for today. Meeting's adjourned.